Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 354. And we're here tonight.
It's been 2 years, Mark, right? It's been 2 years.
Yes. We're here tonight on Odyssey Rumble, DLive and Entropy. And we're here with Sam Mealy, who I'll be introducing shortly. He's pushed me to the very limit already, guys. I'm at the limit. Send him back to prison. He's doing my head in.
Yeah.
So basically, if you're here, you know the score. Look, I'll be back on Friday for a stream. I'll be back on Sunday for a stream. This is obviously already complete chaos. Sam has been sort of quietly trolling me before we went live, which he's finding hilarious and I'm finding extremely stressful. So look, if you like the stream, please do consider leaving a super chat. If you like our work, if you like what we do, if you like Patriotic Alternative, if you support me and Sam, please do think of leaving a super chat. All super chats are very gratefully received. You can super chat through Rumble. You can super chat through Entropy. And if you're watching on replay, you can do the same. You can super chat any of the time. So look, a few thousand people will watch live tonight, but we'll end up with like tens of thousands watching over the course of the week. If you're watching on replay and you like it and you watch it every week, why not give $5 or $10, $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. Those who give more generously, it really, really is appreciated. You can also donate by crypto. All the crypto links in the description below. And you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you want to donate via other means, be that by sort of snail mail or other cryptos that I don't have listed. Now, the important thing is, if you do send a super chat, we will read out all super chats in the second half of the show. It's meant to be a 2-hour show. We might go a little late if we get loads of super chats. Sometimes with big shows like this, we do get loads and loads of super chats. Now, this is a really important show because obviously it's the first show Sam has done since his release from prison. He's obviously been out of prison for a long time, but he's been on license restrictions, which have prevented him from talking about any of these kind of things. So this is a really big show. So please do share it. Please do publicize it. And if you can, please sort of put it up Elon Musk a little bit, because remember, Elon Musk has still got both myself and Sam officially banned on X, although I believe that Sam has set up a sneaky account, which is linked in the description below. So you can follow him there. But if you do support us, please do send a donation. It's really appreciated. We will read out your comments or ask any questions. And tonight's not going to be about Iran. I'm probably going to do a special stream about Iran on Friday called The War Room or something stupid like that. And I'll get a few people on, hopefully Natty and a few others, who want to discuss that issue and talk about the situation there. But this is all going to be about Sam. Obviously, if you want to ask a question that isn't related to Sam, you can. We will answer it. But I am going to do a special stream about the escalation in the Middle East, about Trump's plummeting approval ratings, and the fact it all seems to be going a bit Pete Tong for him in Israel, considering how unpopular they're making themselves. But tonight is the actual main discussion is going to be all about Sam and his experiences. So we're going to get on with that. Now, obviously, it is Sam. We know it's Sam. He's already upset the apple cart by making me laugh just before we went live on the stream and slightly enraging me. But well, it wouldn't be any different, would it? How could it be any different? Having Sam back, he's obviously going to do something like that. And he has every right to. Look, this guy is a really incredible guy, and I'm proud to be able to call him a friend. He's someone that I do spend a huge amount of time with, both online and offline. And not that we're admitting to repeatedly breaking his license conditions by gaming every night for hours at a time. We definitely never did that. do we look like criminals? I mean, do we look like...
A guy like you? Nah.
A guy like me, breaking the law with my friend who's just been released from prison. We would never do that. But look, Sam is a really good friend. And I've got to say this. These sort of things... are essentially quite trying. These kind of things are quite trying. And when people go to jail, or when they go through the criminal justice system, it breaks a lot of people. And I've seen a lot of people give it the big un, talk the talk, only to sort of snap, throw their hand in, decide to go guilty, look for some kind of deal. And Sam never did any of that. I've got to say this, throughout everything that Sam went through, he was completely committed, completely stoic. It never broke him. He didn't show any emotion, no matter what they threw at him. And that is something really, really impressive. There aren't many men out there built like Sam. There aren't many people out there who could go through what he went through. And it's not just the 2 years. he spent in jail and on license. It's the investigation. It's the way they treated his family. It's the way they treated him in court, which was pretty appalling, actually. I was there with him in court. It disgusted me. But no matter what they did to Sam, it never broke him. He never bowed his head. And it's that kind of strength which defines a man. It's that kind of strength that turns a man into a hero. And Sam never asked for any of this. Sam wasn't ever the guy that pushed himself to the front and was, you know, fed posting and wanted to go down in a hail of, you know, fire and flame. Sam was a guy who just did what he thought was right, stayed within the boundaries of the law, and was persecuted for daring to stand up. I'm going to say that he's not just my friend, but he's a hero, and he's somebody that everyone should look up to. Sam is a true martyr of the system, a martyr for free speech, a martyr for nationalism, and really a martyr for every guy out there who wants to stand up against mass immigration, the grooming gangs, and the anti-white agenda. Sam, it's amazing to have you back. What you went through was unprecedented. I don't really know where to start. I mean, people have obviously heard the story of the arrest and all that. I think you've recounted that on many streams. But this is the first time you're online talking about the court case. So unless you've got somewhere else you want to jump off, I mean, you know, is that where you, you know, well, firstly, how have you been, mate? How do you feel? And how does it feel to be like all license restrictions? You're back to normal. You're active again. How does it feel to finally be released with no restrictions?
It feels amazing. I don't think I realized, because I just normalized it over the last 14 months, how much I was policing everything I was doing to make sure I didn't get into trouble. Because I think all in all, I had about 30 plus restrictions put on me. And it covered every aspect of my life since being out. So for them to just be gone all of a sudden, it's like, oh, I can use my phone. I can look up whatever website I want, and I don't have to worry about, you know, at the end of the month when counter-terror confiscate my phone to do like digital forensics on it, I'm not going to have to face questioning over it. It's like, oh, you went on this website. Why were you on that website? What did you read on that website? You know, I can take a call from you, Mark, without thinking like, oh, that's going to come up in that call log. And just generally, it's like, you know, heading to bed at the end of the night, and it's like there's not an ankle tag that end there anymore. It's like I can just take my socks off without having to slide it over or anything. So it's been pretty big. And then now we can just go wherever we want as well. We've booked a little holiday over Violet's birthday in April, and it's like we don't have to inform anyone where I'm going to be or who I'm going to be meeting with or anything like that. I'm just free man again, and I've just jumped in with both feet, really. Obviously back on Telegram, back on X as it's called now, it's fantastic to be here. But I think the trial is probably a brilliant place to start off, because I've been talking to Jared Taylor, because I think he's planning on doing some sort of video covering the case, and going back over it, it's something that I've not really thought about for 2 years now. And it's like, oh yeah, there was this and this and this. And what stood out when talking to Jared about the details of my case was how much I had put into the 100-handers to ensure that I didn't fall foul of incitement to racial hatred laws. And all of that was for nothing, because all it took was being like, yeah, you might have done that. However, you're a racist. So, and then the jury was just like, oh, racist. Oh, well, guilty then. Don't worry about it. Unanimous. You know, it's, but yeah, the trial, what a surreal event that was. I never thought I'd end up in something like that. And it's like, and there I was because I think you were there for most of it, weren't you? I think there was only one or two days when you couldn't do it. It was just childcare, wasn't it? But generally, you attended every single day, and it was so long as well, wasn't it? There was so much. The binder for the evidence was like this thick. They printed off every single sticker in the archive, and then they also had almost every incidence of where a sticker had been reported to media or to police up and down the country. And because I was tried under the counterterrorism protocol, because it was counterterrorism who were prosecuting me, it meant we had to go through every piece of evidence one by one. So we ended up spending about a week doing that alone. before I made it into the box for deposition, which again you helped a hell of a lot with. But yeah, it's been pretty intense. I mean, how did it feel going through it? Because obviously we didn't talk that much, because as soon as the trial finished for the day, we had to get back for the kids, you know, and we didn't get much chance to talk throughout it. But it's like, did it come off bad on your end? It's like, did you think this guy is going to go
for some reason? Your mic is like terrible. What have you done to it?
Oh, really?
Like, it keeps going loud then quiet.
Oh, really? I'll tell you what, it's probably StreamYard. Is it doing some?
Well, it doesn't do it when Laura's doing it, mate.
All right. How's this now?
Is that what have you done?
Not maintaining volume. I've checked the box for automatically adjust mic volume.
Well, I don't know, mate, because like, as I say, people are saying it's your audio is going in and out, and it's just sort of.
How about that? Has that improved it?
No, but I can hear it. Your 1 minute, your voice is sort of like at a level, then it just drops off.
Oh. How about that? I'm just checking and unchecking boxes. Because we haven't had this problem before when we definitely haven't been playing games, have we?
No, but you're sort of like super low, mate. Like, what microphone have you got selected?
It's a microphone Yeti X. It is... Hang on, 2 seconds. Let me move it so it's right in front of me.
Breathe, Mark. Don't snap live on air. It sounds like it's routing it through some laptop mic. Well, you're muted now, mate, so no one can hear you anyway.
Jesus, Webb, sorry. I mean, yeah, it's here. Yeah.
Have you used that, always used that mic?
Yeah, that's always the one we've used.
Right, we'll just have to go for it, mate, and like, you know, it is going to be is what it is, isn't it? Oh, God.
There.
Do you want to just changed? Jump back into what you were saying, but make sure you're close to the mic and you've got the gain turned up?
I'm just wondering if it's this. Unplug that. Right, I can't hear you now.
Oh my God.
Sorry, I'm really sorry. You can hear me though, right?
I can
see the stress in your face already.
You are. Do you know what, mate? You are a clown. I mean, I'm going to say this. You can't hear me. When you watch this back, you are a clown. Yeah.
I'm going to kill myself. Yeah, so I can hear you again.
You can hear me. You can hear me.
I've lost you. There. Now I've got you.
What? But what are you doing? Do you want to go and get Laura, mate? Because she never has this problem. Do you want to go? I'm going to have to like cuck you like live. Go and get your wife. That's the only solution to this mess, isn't
there.
It?
There. Jesus, wept.
But what are you doing?
Yeah. I don't know. you're telling me my microphone's not working. I'm trying to fix it. It goes worse.
Right, we're just going to have a go with it. But I'm texting your missus now. I've actually texted her and says, why on earth did you trust Sam to sort this out? That is the text.
Nothing's changed.
You know,
we talk almost daily without issue.
You know what, mate? Do you know what? I'm ringing your parole officer, mate. So can we have him recalled?
Listen, he can't touch me. He can't touch me now. I can say whatever I want.
Look, so basically, we're in court. I was in court most of the time. We thought it was going well, and it didn't go well. So, you know, that's...
Went about as well as this.
Yeah, yeah. The court case went about as well as this stream is going. You know, and I'd have thought this stream was going to go well. But I thought the court case was going well. So I thought you did pretty well when giving evidence. There was a couple of things I'd have done differently, which I said to you. But, like, you're not the guy that does all the big debates and everything. And one of the things I thought was really unfair was you are kind of like... sort of salt of the earth, normal guy. And you're up against this barrister who's some sort of, you know, super genius, like debates people every day for a living. And he was really, really nasty, sarcastic, belittled you. I mean, as a normal guy stood in front of a court, the whole process is so stacked against you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, because leading up to your deposition, you've got, I mean, in our case, it was almost a solid week of evidence piling up against you. And multiple times, I knew there was something that wasn't true. They asserted that I put these stickers out there, but I always said that I never wanted them put up. And I'm like, well, that's clearly not right. I'm not being duplicitous there. It's like I've got a channel where I post pictures of people putting them up. I'm clearly not saying don't put them up or anything in order to avoid the law, and a few other things. And I had to put my, well, I didn't know what to do because you're in a fishbowl at the back of the court and you're just watching it all play out in front of you. And I just stuck my hand up like I was in school or something. And the judge, to be fair to him, he did let my barrister come to me. He seemed quite amused by this novelty. I'm sure he's probably used to people just sat at the back dealing with it, but I was like, I'm not having this. It's like, because, I mean, they were bringing up things like, it's like, oh, here's a newspaper article about razor blades hidden behind right-wing stickers. And we just kind of moved past that. And I was just like, sorry, don't just load up the jury with that. That's never happened. You know, this is like leftist fantasy, and it's definitely not happened with 100-handed stickers. So it's like I stuck my hand up and, you know, I'd speak through the glass to my barrister and be like, oh, you know, pull him up on this, refuse to allow this and everything. And he'd be like, no, it's not the time for arguments now. That's the deposition. And it's like, oh, right. So now that all these ideas have planted, and I think a weekend even passed where we just allow this to sink into the jury, I'm then expected to get up there in the box and convince them that everything you've had planted in your head is false. You know, there's lies here, lies there, and here's the reality. And it's like, you're starting at the bottom of a big mountain of crap that someone else has piled up for you. So it does feel incredibly unfair. And the fact that they can even get away with putting this evidence in that is completely unfounded. You know, it's infuriating. Sorry, where are we? I keep doing this. I'm waffling again.
Mate, it's fine. Look, I thought when I was in there that, so I've been on trial in that very same building. I was in a different courtroom to you, but it was the same building. And I'll tell you this. One of the things that really shocked me is the way that the legal system has changed since I was on trial. And it's shocking. So the amount of stuff they threw at you and put out there as truths before it could be actually challenged. And, you know, generally speaking, things as serious as that, like, you know, you were instructing people to put razor blades behind the stickers. Now, that wasn't true. And I remember there was a fake Telegram page which had been created by somebody that obviously wasn't you, which had got fake stickers on purporting to be 100-hander stickers. And they were telling people to put razor blades behind the stickers. I remember some of like our detractors, particularly one nasty but rather low IQ woman, went round telling everyone, look, this is him telling people to put razor blades behind the stickers. And all you had to do was click on the Telegram page and look at the details. It wasn't like detective work. It was just a quick click, and it told you it wasn't set up by you, wasn't set up by your account, had nothing to do with you. It was a completely different handle that wasn't on any of the stickers. It was just unrelated. Now, to allow stuff like that before the jury, so before you'd even spoke and introduced yourself, you were essentially painted in the darkest of lights. And I remember one particular bit where the judge actually did come down on your side, where the prosecution attempted to bring up the issue of stickers going up in other countries and what other countries' police forces said about them. It was like this international issue. And the judge said, well, none of this is actually relevant to this trial. Why are you bringing this up? And they were like, oh, for context. And it's like, well, a sticker that's illegal in Australia might be perfectly legal in the UK. The Australians' view of these stickers has no bearing on this trial. And you could see it was a mixture of smears, dirty tricks, and they were firing everything they had at you. They even had some sort of worm who works for Searchlight magazine come and give like expert testimony as to what you were really thinking. You know, somebody who is, you know, undoubtedly a political enemy of yours who wants nothing more than people like us to be locked up or silenced permanently in some way, got to give sort of expert testimony against you.
Yeah,
I mean, there was lots of loads in that trial like that.
A whole profile on that guy, because it's Professor Paul Jackson of University of Northampton, I think. And it's like, and he maintains the Searchlight archive at the university there. And then he teaches courses on like the far right for the last 100 years. He's written books on these things. And then he also teaches kind of like pro-communist revolutionary stuff as well. So it's like, clearly this isn't someone who's got no bias. And when we raise that again with the barrister, it's like, can we get this guy struck off? And he's like, no, he's on like the list of approved experts for the court. And that's all the court cares about. And you're not allowed to pick him apart for his bias or anything like that. The most you can do is question, like, I'll be able to cross-examine him and question any of the facts he's brought up. But it's like, you can't just get him tossed. And it's like, but then you look at his profile and it's like, oh, he advises the Home Office and the police and counterterrorism on how to deal with the far right. And it's like, well, no wonder we're getting so suppressed as we are if the guy leading the charge to the authorities is complete anti-white communist. It's like this is insane. It's like you feel like you're going mental, that it's like this could be allowed in a courtroom, you know.
Well, I found that really shocking, but I also found it particularly shocking the way the barrister, sort of the prosecution, spoke to you. And it was kind of like belittling not just you but sort of any form of sort of in-group preference whites might have. And one particularly shocking bit, I don't know if you remember this, and I can't remember your answer, but I know what mine would have been. He said, why would you be upset if white girls are groomed and raped? You don't know.
Yes.
This. You're just using this for like political reasons. Why would any man be upset that somebody they don't know has had something happen to them? My answer would have been, well, go through Chapeltown, mate, and start tapping people on the shoulder and asking why they're upset about George Floyd, because he lives a lot further away from them than the girls that were raped by Pakistani Muslims live from me here in the UK. And he was so smug, and to sort of put to you that you had no right to be concerned about members of your ethnic group being targeted for racially motivated sex crimes. He was just one of the most, like, I was sat there, and if I could have burnt a hole in the side of his head with like laser vision, laser eye vision, you know what I mean? I would have done. I mean, I was staring at him and I was thinking to myself, you are one of the biggest scumbags I've ever encountered.
You must have picked up on it before me, because during those questions, it was when we were going over the evidence of the rape gangs, and I was getting upset reading these accounts and everything, because it's like, they really do hit me. And he kept going, it's like, but you don't know that person. And I'd be like, well, no, not personally. And he'd be like, all right. And we'd move on to the next one. And I didn't realize until his closing statement, where he explained exactly as you did there, where it's like, yeah, you might be wondering why someone would get upset over someone he doesn't know personally. And if I had hair, it'd be blown back, because I was like, it was like an insight into the psychopathic nature of this kind of multicultural regime, where it's like, oh, we're not expected to identify with a group and empathize with pain that one of our group goes through. And then you begin to understand why the crimes don't cause people to demand change, because it's like, you know, we've just had a stabbing in Birmingham, and it's like, don't matter, not related to me. I don't have it just doesn't relate to me at all. You know, it's like, oh, girl being raped above the local takeaway, don't matter to me, don't know her. And it's like, oh, this is how you can get to a state where the crimes keep adding up and adding up and adding up. And at no point do you go, enough, because it's like each one is done by an individual, like a complete cipher, which you don't read any sort of identifying marker onto. You don't see race, age, sex, anything like that. It's just body A did something to body B, and then the next time something happens, that's just a whole new case. And it's like, oh, I can see how we've got to this point now, because this is what multiculturalism demands of you, is for you to not identify with any group. And if you see another group doing something, don't identify that group either. Everything's just done by an individual to another individual. And it really is horrifying, because you realize, well, we've seen the kind of crimes that permits. It's tens, hundreds of thousands of girls raped, murders almost every single day. And it carries on, and at no point can they say, like, oh, I'm starting to notice a trend, you know? It's I really was flabbergasted by it. I couldn't believe it when he brought up that he's like, oh, you know, you might think he's putting out crocodile tears. And I was like, it's like, the, you know, when you're reading the stories of what happened to these girls, and yeah, it tears me up. And it's like, but for someone like him, you know, a cog in the system, it's just, no, it's just something that happens. And it's like, yeah, it left me fuming.
Now, I remember when it wrapped up, and I thought you did really, really well. And I think, you know, as a normal guy who isn't some guy who does all the debates and everything like that, I don't think it could have gone much better. You did a really, really good job. And there were little things that I could nitpick, but generally speaking, you answered most of the questions as I would. You carried yourself really well. And your barrister gave probably the best defense of you that I could ever imagine. And his final defense of you was so good. I had a list of things that I had written down that I would have said. And I thought, well, this is what, and I didn't go in and give them to him or anything, but I thought these are the boxes I would tick. And he ticked all of those, but came up with arguments that I'd actually missed. This guy was incredible. And when he delivered his final speech, I thought you were going to get off. And I remember sitting there in the old cafeteria area, which is now all sort of shuttered because of budget cuts and things. And we thought you were going to get off. And I remember I had to leave early that day and said, well, I'll be back on Monday. And I remember getting or back on the next day, and I thought, well, you know, it'll take them a day or so to come to a verdict. And when the verdict came so quickly and I got the text message, I was shocked. But when you actually heard the, you know, guilty, how did you feel? And was it shock, or was part of you expecting that?
I mean, we'd been lined up. The barrister, like I say, was really good. But he'd been lining us up for essentially like a kind of split decision or a hung jury, because it was like the country came down 50-50 on Brexit, and he expects the jury to come out like that as well. But I think the difference is, obviously, Brexit is a private vote. In this case, there's 12 people locked in a room together to come to this conclusion. And, you know, it's a jury of my peers. Three of them weren't even my countrymen. And then there's like one or two who I could tell just didn't like me from the very start. One of them, to the point where I was like, do I know that guy? Because I swear, I worked with someone who looked just like him. And I ended up actually finding out where that ex-co-worker worked and calling them and being like, is he on jury duty at the moment? And they're like, no, he's in. And I was like, all right, it can't be him. I guess he just has a generic look. But as soon as he came in the courtroom, he was giving me evils. And I was just like, you're a lost cause. But all I needed was three people to hold out for me to get that hung jury. And I think in that room, arguing against three non-whites, maybe some shit libs, and like that, it's like how many white people who aren't initiated into kind of political debate or anything like that are going to be willing to stand up for another white man's free speech, which the reference to it being legal and true and everything was kind of way back at the start. Since then, it's just been a deluge of evidence and deposition and everything. So it's like that's all that kind of basis for the trial seemed almost forgotten about, and now we're onto it. It's like, do you think this guy's a good guy? And it's like, to that question, they obviously decided no. You know, it's like for someone to put this out, no, they can't possibly be a good guy. So I'd hoped for innocent, and I felt like we've done well. And you know, the stickers that they took a real issue with, the stuff around the rape gangs primarily, we evidenced all that. And it's like, these things do exist. And I think that's something that's changed massively since I went away. Like, when I went away, we were in court arguing with the prosecution over whether these things happened. I've then come out of jail, last year, and it's BBC Newsnight, and they're going, yes, the rape gangs did happen. Yes, it was predominantly Pakistani men. And then we've had, obviously, a Lowe's grooming gang inquiry. And it's like, We've moved forward in that conversation, but it's like the fact is back then it was still being denied. After having decades of it being denied, they were still there in the courtroom being like, what? Rape gangs? I've never even heard of these things. And it's like, oh! And then for like 12 months later to come out of jail and then to me, it's like, of course there's rape gangs. They were always there. We knew they were there. I don't know why you were making such a big stink about it. And it's like, I'm taking crazy pills. So, over here, you know? So yeah, it's but to get guilty and to get unanimous guilty like that as well, because if you remember, we did think, I think that morning when you were still there, we were all called back into the courtroom and we thought, oh, this has been a quick result. And they had a question for the judge, and the question was basically the charges related to, I think, 14 specific stickers, again mainly relating to the rape gang stuff. And the jury was asking, it's like, are we supposed to take just these 14 into account for the charge of inciting racial hatred, or all 300 plus stickers? And the judge said, well, it's the whole archive, because partway through the trial, the police expanded it to the whole archive. And that shitlib who hated me from the start looked crestfallen, and I thought, okay, we might be in with a chance here. Because I thought, it's like, if you're talking about the whole archive, that's got to be better for me. Because we'd brought this up, but only 13% of the stickers made reference to race, multiculturalism, diversity. It's like the rest were covering things, saying things like lift weights, stop watching porn. So it's like, how could you, if you have to take the whole archive into account, how can you think my intent is to incite hate when only basically 1 in 10 stickers actually talks about race, let alone, you know, incites people to racial hatred? So I really thought with that question, we were on to a winner. And then when it came back unanimous guilty, and Laura, was it the sentencing? No, it was, I think I was still in the courtroom. Laura was in the canteen with Catherine, because we didn't have childcare that day, and we'd got the verdict, and she saw the jury members coming out of the back room, wherever they are, and it feeds into the canteen and out the door, but like they're all just laughing and joking together, and it's like, do you realize what this has done? Like, I'm gonna miss my kid's birth, and you know. And at this point, you know, we didn't know it was going to be 2 years. It was 3 to 7, I think, was the kind of sentencing guidelines. So it's like, I was thinking, it's like, Christ, you know, am I going to be coming out to a 9-year-old and a 7-year-old who I've seen on weekend visits at a prison? And But yeah, they just went about their day, and I don't think they necessarily. I mean, it could be the fact that I was up for stickers. So, could you be blamed for thinking this probably doesn't carry much of a charge? You know, maybe it's just a fine, guilty. But there we were, and yeah, we got that guilty verdict, and I was just completely crestfallen because I thought. But to be honest, one of the first things I asked my barrister when we got out into the breakout room, I said, it's like, has this set a precedent for the actual content of the stickers? Is it now inciting racial hatred to say it's okay to be white, stop watching porn, you know, to, you know, or any of the 300 stickers? And he said, no. Even if someone was to put these stickers out there today, there's no charge against them. The charge is against you. For when you wrote them, you intended to incite racial hatred. Actually putting them out there, like I say, as the I think the prosecution's opening statement describes them, extreme but lawful. None of them are illegal statements. So that I was pleased about, and I'd pleased that we'd kind of come through it. And the only impact was going to be against me and in my family, but the actual statements would continue to be able to be said on British streets.
So obviously, you know, getting the guilty verdict, you must have felt like crushed and crestfallen, as you said. But then there was that period in between the guilty verdict and the sentencing. Now, I knew that once they'd found you guilty, you were going to jail. But they sort of they dangle this carrot of a potential suspended sentence, which I never thought you were getting. But then at the last minute,
I had the pre-sentence report with probation. And they recommended suspended because they were like, prison isn't going to do this guy any good. You know, he's not going to learn anything from it. But, you know, regardless. Sorry, continue.
Well, no, they gave you some hope, didn't they? Then on the morning, we all were about to go in for the sentencing. And I was there with you and Laura and a group of well-wishers from PA. And it was incredible because as you were about to go in, the judge was like, I need to review the sentence. I've changed my mind, essentially. And it was all delayed by about an hour. And it was almost as if you were going to get that suspended sentence. Then the judge had some pressure, changed his mind, and obviously sent you down for 2 years. I mean, obviously you must have been crushed when he said that you were going to jail.
Yeah, I was completely spiraling because he was really dramatic about it. Remember, he called us in originally and then he kind of came in his gown and all rise and everything. And he's like, I have to give this some further thought. Reconvene in 20 minutes. And it's like left. We all left. And then for 20 minutes, and my solicitor went, you are shafted. This is basically him pretending like he's giving it a lot of thought, but he's basically prearranged this and he's going to be nailing you. And I was just like, oh my God. And just completely spiraling out there in the lobby of the courtroom. And then we went back in and he came down and, well, you know, they love to do it when they're sentencing nationalists. They get on the high horse. You are an anti-Semite and you are a threat to the fabric of this society. And then you're like, oh, yeah, but I was intent on just locking eyes with him and just giving him nothing. Like, I'm not giving you the satisfaction, you know. And then eventually he'd finished and it was 2 years and he said, you can take him down. And I stood up and went into that back room and yeah, and it just all hit me. I was upset at the result, but at the same time, it felt like it was over. Like my original arrest at this point was 3 years prior. And for 3 years, we'd been working with this hanging over our head. 3 years? Yeah, 3 years. And 1 year of that was waiting for this court case to come round. And it was just like, it's done now. I've had counterterrorism crawling all over my private messages, my entire history within political activism. And they basically found nothing. It was all based on this 100-hander stuff, and it's like it's done now. And, you know, whatever the next step is, it just is what it is. And it felt good to be able to put that to bed. But then knowing, like I say, missing Violet's birth. They took things I'm never going to get back. Yeah, they just didn't feel like there was any justice to it, and I didn't feel like I'd been caught in the act of doing something illegal. So to get 2 years when you'd worked so hard to work within the law, such a woolly law as our speech laws are as well, and it's like you've got rules saying don't put these stickers anywhere where they could be considered intimidatory or hateful. You've got record of you deleting a sticker that you felt bordered on incitement. And it's like, if I intended to incite, why would I be deleting stickers that I feel bordered upon incitement? Why? I mean, at the point of my arrest, I've been doing it 5 years. 5 years I've been putting out these stickers, and they're going to tell me that it's like, we think you intended to incite racial hatred. And it's like, believe me, if I'm going to publish material for 5 years and I want to incite racial hatred, you'd know about it. I'd be, you know, slurs all over them. I'd be saying, it's like, you know, here's the stats now, here's what to go out and do. You know, it's like, but none of that was there. It was all inferred. It's like you've got private messages, you know, where I've got no reason to lie, where I'm talking to personal friends and being like, I think this falls within the law. It's like, we don't want to incite anything. We want to stay legal. We want to start conversations between our people. You know, who's the target audience for these stickers? It's us. You know, we don't want to be placing stickers in, you know, 95% non-white areas. It's like, no, these want to be in white areas to get white people to realize that there's other people around you who think the same as you. You know, and it is heartening. I mean, I think where I lived at the time, I remember seeing a 100-hander sticker pop up on a post box at the end of my street and thinking, it's like, there's someone around here who's got very similar thoughts to me. And it's like, because of the anonymous nature of it, it's like, I can't start reaching out and being like, oh, who put this one up? Because you live near me or anything. But yeah, oh God, that first, it was all just... It didn't hit me until a few days in, you know, and I mean, I wasn't alone for almost 2 weeks, you know, all the time you're around either one other person in your cell or you're out on social and it's, you know, 150 other men. And it's like, there's no time for crying or anything like that. But eventually at one point while I was in prison, I was under a terrorism tact designation, which meant that I had to have a solo cell in case I was to radicalize my cellmate. So it's like about 2 weeks in, I got moved to a solo cell, and I was basically kept in a solo cell for the rest of my time inside. But yeah, there was plenty of times when it just came flooding over me, and you just... And thankfully, I had some alone time to kind of deal with that. But yeah, it's had such an impact. And yeah, and here we are 2 years on. And it's like, I mean, thank God it doesn't seem to have impacted Violet. There's no difference that I can tell that, you know, to say that I wasn't there for 10 months. Catherine as well. You know, the kids, thankfully, were young enough where they're resilient. They bounced back. You know, I mean, God, I don't know how people do it with teenage kids, you know, where it's like, they're like, hey, we're coming to visit Dad. He's definitely in a prison. Whereas my kids, being that young, they're just like, oh, he's working away. You know, and it's like, once we got the confirmation that I was going to be out on December 17th, thanks to the SES 40% thing, where you only do 40% of your sentence, we were like, okay, I'm going to be out before Christmas. And Catherine's beginning to ask questions. We're going to tell her that I was off working for Santa making toys. So every so often I'd come out with a matchstick toy for her to show her what we've been doing, you know. But yeah, it's going back through it, and especially writing the book as well, going back through the diary and remembering the moments that I'd forgotten and the things I was thinking at the time. Yeah, it's been pretty intense reading it. So that was going into prison.
Obviously, yeah. When they take you away, and you're led away, what's it like actually getting booked in? Because I've always imagined that it would be pretty harrowing if you were sort of a smaller guy, who wasn't used to like mixing with normal people. But you had a couple of things going for you. First is you're a big bloke and you know how to handle yourself. And the second thing is you generally are a very normal, down-to-earth, approachable guy that works with people on building sites and the trades. You know how to talk to people. You know, you're not some sort of, you know, 5'4", you know, Poindexter, who's never spoke to a, you know, a builder's, you know, somebody who works on a building site. You're the opposite of that. So when they took you away and they were booking you in, you know, how was the process of sort of your first night? Was it sort of worse or better than expected? Because I kind of like, you, a lot of people only have things to draw on, like films, you know, like the Shawshank Redemption and stuff, where one guy would be fine.
I wasn't being chased around
night.
The shower room by the sisters or anything. I don't know if that's an American jail thing or something, but it's like, it seems American media portraying jail, everyone's getting raped all of the time. None of that was going on, at least in the two British jails that I was in. I think there was one gay incident where someone got caught doing something with someone else, and everyone was just kind of like, you know, no one was like, yeah, that's a power move or anything like that. It's like, no, everyone's just like, stay away from me, you weirdo. My first introduction to the jail was, I was the last one from holding process through. They couldn't find a bed for me until 11 o'clock. So my first opening out into the jail was while it was on, the lights were on the night cycle. So it's almost pitch black. So it just looks like it just goes on forever. It's like three stories of just steel doors, dead silent. And it seems to go on forever. Someone throws a pack of bedding down at me, and then I come into this room, and they bang the door open, and they go, it's like, oh, Colin, get up! You've got a pad mate now! And he's like, what the hell? And I was like, oh, this is, yeah, great, thanks. You know, ingratiate myself immediately. But he seemed all right. It was a bit ADD, kind of bouncing all over the walls and everything, but he just seemed really curious about why I was in. I realise now that the reason why people are curious why you're in is because everyone wants to know who the nonces are. And when a sex offender goes into jail, they basically sign a piece of paper that says if they want to go into general population rather than be on the wing with all the other sex offenders, they sign away their right to sue them if they get hurt. So every so often you'll get a sex offender, maybe a rapist or something like that, who will think like, yeah, I can hang with the regular people. And they'll go in there and they're normally a bit shaky about why they're in, which is the big clue that they're a sex offender. But he was really interested in the political stuff. And I think we stayed up for about another 2 hours just talking politics and why I do what I did, what I was in for and everything. And he seemed really pleased with that. And yeah, we seemed to get along great. And he was saying like, I've been doing that spice, which I think is some sort of synthetic drug, but it basically just completely zombifies you. But he's like, yeah, I've been doing that spice, but now you're here, I'm going to get clean. We're going to work out in the yard. We're going to get clean. And I was like, all right, cool. That's great. Yeah. I'll help you with that. And everything will be great. And then the next morning, he's out the door immediately and he disappears into the crowd and I don't see him again. Until the end of social, and he comes back, and it's like I'm reading a book on the bed, and I look over the edge, and I realise he's just slumped on his chair like that, and I was like, oh, for fucking hell. I was like, come on, it's like, Colin, you haven't even lasted 2 hours, man, and he's like, oh, it's all right, and everything, yeah, but we ended up getting our cells spun, or searched, I think two days in, And it's like the door just flew open one day. He's like monged out on the chair. I'm reading a book. And the police are like, cell search, and he's like, God, bloody hell. And it's like, sorry, I'm coming down off a cough. But they strip searched us both, and all over Carling's like side table was these. They take the vape cartridges and they like do something with them to expose the elements so you can burn something straight on them, in order to burn the spice. And they're all over his desk, and he's obviously monged out. And they're like, "Who's are these then?" And I'm just like looking at him, like, "I don't know whose these are." You know, it's like I ain't no snitch, but at the same time, it's 2 days in. I'm not going down for this retard. You know, thankfully, I think they said we were both going to get called up to the governor, and I was like, 2 days in, all right. And then the next day, though, they moved me into another cell, and Carling got segregated, just taken down the isolation cells for having spice. I think the wing officers, they know what the score is. They know who's smoking the spice. They know who's dealing the spice. And I think the new, you know, 2 days in guy isn't going to be, it's like, yeah, get it down me, you know. You know. But yeah, it's a wild time in there, and it's a lot more jovial than you expect, but there's just this undercurrent of violence everywhere. Like there's a lot of evidence of violence. There'll be people with black eyes wandering around, self-harm, either scars or active, you know, bandaging. And then every so often, raised voices on the wing, or occasionally you'll get an alarm sound from another wing, and like every screw in the place sprints towards the gates, and it's like the sound of those boots on the steel walkways and everything, it's just absolute thunder as everyone runs. It was normally B-Wing, which was nicknamed Beirut, and I think they put all the worst kind of antisocial types on this one wing so they could keep them all in one place. But yeah, every so often it'd kick off, and it's like you'd just be hanging out with some of the guys having a laugh, and then all of a sudden someone's had, I think I saw two people get kettled while I was in there, which is they fill up a kettle full of boiling water and then you throw it on someone. If it's a real vendetta, then you put salt in the water. Oh, no, sugar. You put sugar in the water, so that also melts and just leaves them with really messed up scarring. And I remember seeing that happen to one guy, and then a few weeks later he kind of appeared back on the wing, and it's like his cheek and neck were kind of fused to his shoulder, and it's like Jesus. But a lot of that was over debt, drug debt mainly, because that's where the kind of real worth comes in. But every so often you'd see someone with a black eye, and you know that he had borrowed more vapes than he could pay back. So it's like, yeah, there was just that constant element of just, and also not wanting to piss off the wrong person, you know. Thankfully, I think I came in there wanting to be straight with who I was. I didn't want to come in there and be like, all right, it's me, Samuel Ten Men. It's like, no one best mess with me, you know. And I didn't want to come in there being like, it's like, oh, I'll do anything to get along with everyone. You know, it's like, I get along well with people on the outside. Like you say, you know, I'm on building sites all day and everything like that. So it's like, surely I should be fine getting along with these people. And I did. And I made a lot of friends there, and I was quite well respected in there. I think people like someone who just keeps to themselves, doesn't involve themselves in drama, doesn't get themselves in debt, you know, doesn't have violence kind of happening in their periphery or any of this kind of stuff. And Leeds was chaotic, but it was, we had some good times. Like at one point I organized a pool tournament and I got everyone involved. I think about halfway through the pool tournament, the table we weren't using, that broke out into a fight, and people were smashing pool cues over each other's backs and stuff. And it's like, oh, okay then. And we had to like pause the tournament for a few days until we were allowed back to use the pool tables. But it's just like, it's, but then the final for that pool tournament was fantastic. Like it was best of five, and the two guys who were playing, big wing personalities, funny guys, shit talking and everything like that, big crowd around and everything, and it felt really good. And then they won I'd made him a little matchstick trophy for the winner, and everyone shook hands, and then it just kind of melted back into the regular chaos, and it's like nothing lasts long there, but you find your friends and you have a good time. You know, you find the bright spots, and then you ignore the fact that, you know, almost every night it seems like someone's trying to kill themselves.
I heard, though, I mean, you might be able to confirm this or not, but I've always heard that, like, juvenile facilities are actually a lot worse than adult facilities, because in juvenile ones, everyone's trying to prove themselves, whereas in adult facilities, a lot of people are just there keeping their head down, trying to finish their time. Now, you weren't long in Leeds. They moved you to Hull pretty quickly, and you served most of your sentence in Hull, and we did a big demonstration outside Hull prison. How did you find it in Hull? Because that was a less secure facility than Leeds. It was mainly ethnic homogenous. And I remember Laura always telling me stories about your time in Hull. And you seem like you were so well liked there. Everything she said, I mean, I'm not saying it was like a holiday camp, but you did seem, you know, from the moment you got there, everyone warmed you. She told me about people giving you extra food. And there's this kind of thing that, like, nationalists are hated when they get into jail. But you were treated really well in Hull, weren't you?
Yeah. I think when I landed on G Wing, which is the induction wing of Hull, I think it was only a day or two that I was there. But I remember being in the queue for the canteen, and all the prisoners who are working on the canteen. And if you work on the canteen on the wing, you're basically, you dictate who gets the good food. So you're highest on the pecking order. And as I'm getting closer, they're all looking over at me, and I'm like, it's either going to go really well or really badly. And the first one I come to, he goes like, What are you in for, mate? And I was, I had a sticker campaign against mass migration, the rape gangs, stuff like that. And he goes like, legend, mate. Oh, we love you around here. Like, and it's like, and all the guys there are like, it's like, yes, you legend. It's like, get over here, have an extra chicken leg. And then I was like, oh, great. So, and it's like, and then word got about that it's like, that's what I was in for. And you'd have people coming up and being like, I fucking hate those rape gangs, mate. Oh, get them all gone. That's what I say. I'll be like, all right, okay, what are you in for? Bank robbery, mate. I hate banks as well. Yeah, all right, okay. I mean, it's not really the best recruiting pool you want to pull from. However, the support is almost universal. I think there was only two or three conversations I had with non-whites while I was in Hull, where they were kind of like, oh, you're in here for being against migration, aren't you? And I was like, yeah. And then we'd talk about it, and I'd just be like, listen, you know, you've got your home country. You identify with that culture, if like that. And it's like, how would you feel if there's another population moving in and displacing you? And it's like, we wouldn't let it happen. We wouldn't let it happen in my country. And I was like, okay. I know you wouldn't let it happen. Say the state was forcing that to happen to you. What would you do? And it's like, oh, I'd kick off, mate. I'd kick off with the state. And you're like, okay, so now you see where we're coming from here. You know, that's all we're basically arguing for is you have your homeland, we have our homeland, and hopefully never the two shall meet. So it's like that never escalated, because it's like you could always just level it back at them and being like, well, would you like it to happen to you? And they'd be like, well, no. It's like, right, so there we are. But yeah, we got along really well. I mean, from G-Wing, moved over to D-Wing, and it's like there, we had the exercise yard was actually, it was built especially for Charles Bronson while he was there. And it was just a cage, you know, like a steel cage from like a wrestling match, like literally all five sides covered. And there was nothing really to do in there. It was completely bare. And apparently Bronson used to just run around it over and over again. We developed a game of, like, I guess you call it squash. But you take a stress ball, squeezy stress ball, and you use your hand as a paddle, and you would whack it against the wall, and then the next person has to receive it and whack it against the wall. And it started off small. Sorry, am I being loud? Right, sorry, I'm being really loud. It's the headphones, I can't tell how loud I am. Okay. All right, I'll stop laughing. Nothing but serious prison talk from here on out.
Mate, I'm going to be texting your wife for the second time. I've texted her about the mess up, and I'm going to be like, look, love, you don't interrupt the man while he's storytelling. This is unacceptable.
Yeah. But yeah, with that game, it's like at the height of summer, there were 20 of us each playing this squash game and just like laughing, joking around and everything. And I'd regularly tell Laura, I was like, this is like, it's like an adult daycare for most of these guys. It's like a break from the world. Because especially the young guys, they haven't got family, they haven't got kids or anything like that. So, and most of the friends are already in there. Like that was really hard to fathom, was the fact that it's like, I don't think I know anyone who's been in prison. And then coming to there, and it's like you'd have someone new arrive on the ring, and it'd be like, all right, Damo, how are you doing? It's like, oh, Craig, I haven't seen you in years, mate. How are you doing? And it's like, oh, yeah, been down Wandsworth. And you know, it's like, and then get together again. And you're like, God, you just, everyone's got friends everywhere in here, you know? So, yeah, it's like D-Wing was great. But then the protest outside Hull Prison happened, and me and my cellmate, we were pressed against the window listening to it. I think about 10 minutes in, my door flew open and strip searched. I think they were looking for a phone because I think they thought I was coordinating it from the inside, like the mastermind.
You're the mastermind.
That I am. That's right. Banner 2 meters to the left. Perfect. and then I was segregated for two days, and that was like real prison. That just bare cell. Nothing, you don't have a clock, you're stripped back to just prison garb, and there's just absolutely nothing to do for 48 hours. And it's, and I didn't know it was going to be 48 hours, I didn't know how long I was going to be down there. But yeah, I got dragged off about 10 minutes into that protest, and they then stuck me over on H-Wing, which is about as far away from where you did the demo as possible. So you did it at the front of the jail, that's where I was. It stuck me way over at the back. But H-Wing as well, got along really well with everyone there. Lots of really good friends, became well known. I got on the server. It wasn't that hard. It was the missing the family. But in terms of the day to day, if you avoid debt, if you avoid drugs, if you're humble, you know, you're not coming in there like I say, like 10 men. You will just get by. The people who really struggle are the ones with families. And God, people coming in there on drugs, it's insane. And then once they get on the spice, there was one guy who was called Vicious. It was an abbreviation. I think it was a Polish surname, like Mikkel Vicious or something like that. But he was called Vicious. And it was an apt name. He was about 6'5", built like a tank, and like just really rough beard and everything like that. And he was just... like he was psychotic, and he'd like come up to you and like start kissing people's necks and stuff. He was a real weirdo, but he was always on spice and always getting caught and always going down to segregation. So every few weeks he'd disappear for a week at a time and then come back and immediately get on spice again. And it's like, how does the segregation not impact you and think like, I'm not going to do drugs anymore or anything like that? But he was always just monged out. I mean, you'd have people coming through canteen, like clearly monged out, and it's like the meal is the same time every day. You know you're going to have to come out of your cell, and you'd have people come up to the canteen with the tray in hand, like shaking, and you're like, "You're right, mate," and they're like, "Yeah." And then all of a sudden, one time, this guy put his tray down on like the sliding thing, and he just went flying right off the end of the canteen. And we're like, "Way, there you go, mate," and everything. But yeah, it's the actual people there. It's like a playgroup or something, except every so often someone gets stabbed or boiling water thrown over them. But thankfully, no.
But like you said, so it's not like an American jail where people are getting murdered every day.
No. But I mean, the thing was as well, I was category B, which put me the same as extremely violent criminals and actual terrorists. However, category B prisons, high security prisons, they don't take you unless you're doing over two years, which I obviously wasn't. So I was held in remand prisons, and remand prisons, a lot of them are people who are awaiting trial. So obviously they don't want to make more trouble while they haven't even been to trial yet. Cause I mean, so many of the guys there are in on like, just kind of like he said, she said domestics, and they end up getting walkouts. One of my pad mates who was fretting that he'd, go down. I was like, dude, there's no way. Like this case against you is like pure Hollyoaks. Like no one, there's no evidence for it. And it's like, the judge is going to toss it. He did get a walkout. I think there was another guy I was friends with. I think him and his bird had an argument. He texted her, calling her a fat bitch. So she did him for like malicious communication or something like that. He got a walk out. You know? So someone like that, they're not in there being like, so I'm going to make a name for myself while I'm in here. It's like, no, they want to just do the time, get the trial done, and hopefully get minimal time served. So thankfully, remand prisons are pretty good. You know, proper Cat B prisons, I'd be in there with people who are doing 20, 30 years at a time. So, yeah, they've got a little bit less to lose.
So eventually your time in prison came to an end, and there were lots of other things that happened. So on the outside, it was really entertaining because we were all sort of getting people to write letters to you. And then there was the time when they tried to stop you seeing your kids. And then we sort of got that overturned by bombarding the prison with so many letters. The governor was like, oh, I don't need this crap in my life. But it all sort of ended. So obviously time might move differently when you're inside and when you're outside. I don't know how time moves in there, whether it's slow or quick, but it moved so quickly on the outside. And it sort of seemed that you went down at the beginning of the year and you were kind of out for Christmas. And we were like, this is great. He's out already. But what a lot of people don't realize is you come out, but you're not really out. Because, I mean, you went down, what was it, February time you went down, and then you came out just before. Was it just before Christmas you came out?
Yeah, so I think I did 10 months in total of the 2 years. But yeah, it's like when you come out, you're on license. And license can vary. So I've just been in touch with a friend from
prison. Can you move your mic just a little bit underneath you?
A little bit underneath me. Yes. How's that? Is that a bit better?
I don't know. It just needs to be nearer, I feel. You sort of dropped down again.
I'm pretty much on it. Is that?
That sounds amazing when you like that.
Really? Does that sound like that? Okay. It's just the camera then, isn't it? That's the only problem. There you go. Right, I'm right up on you. Yeah, you're out on license. My license was incredibly stringent. I had 30 plus restrictions, no internet at all. Like I couldn't even go on an internet enabled device like an Xbox. You could connect to the internet, you can't do it. So I had I was given like an old chocolate bar phone to use for the first 6 months. But it was no contact with anyone in PA, no radicalizing or recruiting people to extremism. So that obviously killed off a lot of my plans once I got out. What's another one? Oh, yeah, they had this one where it's like if I had any new relationship, I had to inform them. So if I made friends with another dad down the playground, I had to let counterterrorism know so that they could do a background check on them, which would require a name and date of birth. So suffice to say, I wasn't making many friends asking for those details right off the bat. And I was in an approved premises as well. And that was something that all the other prisoners had been like, oh, approved premises is easy, mate. You're in there 4 weeks and then they let you go home. And I was like, oh, great. And then I got there and they're like, yeah, because you're being handled by the National Security Division, we're allowed to keep you in an AP up to 12 months. And I was like, what? I can't go home for 12 months. And it's like, yeah, and there's going to be a curfew between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. And it's like, so I can't even put my kids to bed. It's like, all right. I ended up at an AP for 7 months, and they just it just didn't move for the longest time. And while I was in that AP, I was seeing people who were in for grievous bodily harm, people who had been in for 10 years and were just coming out. They came and went. So within like 3 weeks, I was an old head at the AP, just to see these people. And as well, it's like I was in there on my absolute best behavior because I was like, I want to get home as soon as possible. And then the other people in the AP, they're coming in steaming drunk. They're fucking arguing with the staff. They're getting caught with drugs in the place. I think across the road from the AP was a crack house that they just used to hang out all day. And then they'd come back to the AP. But it's that was infuriating. And with all those restrictions, and the punishment was recall, and it wouldn't just be a 7 day recall because of the severity of my crimes. Any sort of recall would have been a full recall for the rest of my sentence. So if I'd gone away in February, I'd be back in prison for 12 months until next February. So I basically just shut down my life for 6-7 months until eventually they were pushing me to get work, and I was like, well, I can work at the place that I used to work at. However, it requires the use of a smartphone. And they were like, okay, we'll run that up the pole, and I ended up getting that job. But again, they were just like, it's like, is there going to be anyone else there? And I was like, well, it's interior insulation on houses. There might be someone there. And they're like, I don't think we can have you in the room with someone else. And I was like, why? And they're like, the risk of radicalization is too high. And I was like, didn't know my voice carried so much power, to be honest. But it's the sheer aura alone makes you just. I end up assuring them, it's like, there's definitely no one living in these houses that I'm working on. And again, with the co-workers, you know, they were like, oh, it's not related to PA, is it? And I was like, no. Don't worry about it. First day back at work, they're like, all right, Sam, you know, it's like, can't believe what they did to you, bastards. we're at that demo in Leeds. It was great. Oh, you know, it's like, oh, great. So it's coming back. It was just talking politics with them as well. But yeah, and then that just whiled away time until we reached this point here. But I mean, being away from the friends, and because I mean, so much of my life is wrapped up in PA now. Obviously, I mean, thankfully they cut out an exception for my wife, the deputy leader of PA. But then my own father, because he'd spoken at that PA demo in Leeds, they were kind of umming and ahhing over whether to okay him to see me or offer me to see him. And it's just like they've got you completely over a barrel, because it's nothing to them to send you back. It's a bit of paperwork, but it's like, we don't care, you know, we'll just send you back to prison. You know, this is better than prison, right? And then the probation meetings. God, my probation officer. I met him just before I got out. And first thing he said to me was like, don't worry, I'm not like the other probation officers. And turns out what he meant by that was like, I'm even a bigger boomer shitlib than you've ever seen before. And that first day meeting him was like an hour and a half arguing with him. It's like, what do you mean black people can't be British? And I was like, well, there's British citizenship, they can hold that. However, to be an ethnic Briton, like English, Welsh, they literally cannot be that. It's like, I can't even understand. I think you're just a racist. And it's like, oh my God. And it's just, it was a year of every week, an hour to 2 hours of just the worst arguments you've ever heard. And if you caught him up on something that he'd said previously, it would be, it's like, oh, I was only saying that to antagonize you. And it's like, really? Because it seemed like you were the one getting irate over it. And it's just, I include the quote on the back of my book, but he sent me an email before we got out, because we'd had a bit of a back and forth, and he straight up says, it's like, the difference between you and me is I love multiculturalism, and I don't believe you have any more right to this land because of some accident of birth. And I was like, oh, you are just the worst. He was there right up until the end. I think that I last saw him, it was last Wednesday, was the last time I saw him. And God, I'm glad to see the back of him. But anything you brought up, he'd deny it. If you brought up, I don't know, ONS, to say, don't believe you. It's like, I can't. You want to have this conversation. I'm trying to have this conversation with you, but it's like, you're just giving nothing. And it's like, to the point, like with the rape gang things, you know, you'd think at this point, impossible to deny. He was still denying that kind of thing. Oh, well, don't you know, 90% of these crimes are done by white men. And it's like, we're not talking about all sex crime or anything like that. And it's like having to explain to a child every week. And he kind of threatens you with, you can't disengage from him, because it's like, well, you know, if we feel you're not complying, back to the big house with you. So you're like, okay, you've got me over a barrel here. Surprisingly enough, I also had weekly meetings with Prevents Desistance and Disengagement Program, I think it's called. And they normally deal with terrorists. and basically explain to him how pipe bombing a mosque is a bad idea, or a pipe bombing an arena is a bad idea. But they were pretty cool. Like, you just talk to them, you'd have a laugh with them, and there was nothing you pushed back on. To the point where I was asking them, it's like, are you going to be bringing the intervention material at any point? But they didn't have it. It was just, the mildest of pushback from them. But I think they're also more used to talking to real nutters. Whereas this probation officer, he hated me so much. And it's just, I loved getting on under his skin as well. You'd antagonize him with stuff. It was funny, there was this one time he had like a trainee probation officer with him, and he was being all kind of lighthearted and everything. I was like, this is a different version of you, isn't it? It's like, last week you were probably losing, you about to jump the table. I mean, he's like, oh, we like to get a bit rowdy, don't we, Sam? And I was like, I don't know, it's you. You're freaking out all the time. But yeah, it's like that. But through that interrogation, all it did was clarify my thoughts on these things. I feel like I've tackled almost every opposition there is possible to receive on these things, and only come out stronger. And then realizing who these people are, how the mindset works, and everything, just makes you realize, it's like they can't have power. They've just got to be got rid of, because they are so dangerous. And frankly, they just wish us ill. So they need to be get gone.
So now it's all over and it's wrapped up. You know, obviously it's not changed you. You're eager to be back out there. You know, we're announcing it now. You're the guest speaker in Nuneaton on March the 28th. Sam will be there. So if you want to hear Sam speak and you want to meet him, he's going to be the main speaker there. He will be the last man on after both myself, Laura and Steve Laws. But this hasn't really changed you, has it? You seem to have come out of this just as cheery. I mean, I haven't really noticed any difference. And, you know, obviously, having not spoken to you at all, basically, until today, you know, I've got to say, you know, on all the times we didn't meet, you know, when you're on license, you know, you seem to have got through this extremely well. And, you know, considering we've had, like, because we've had trouble causes in these chats, one particular little weasel was in here every week when Laura was reassuring people that you're having a good time, that the people in the cafeteria liked you, that you were doing the pool tournament, that you were making your matchstick houses. There's this guy in the chat every week saying, no, he'll be cowering in his cell. He'll be, you know, he'll be getting beaten every day. The fear of death will be running through him. But I'm not saying it was easy, but you do seem to have dealt with this extremely well. And obviously tonight we've heard sort of highs and lows, but coming out of this, I don't think anyone could have dealt with it as well, really, as you have. You know, it's, you faced an awful amount of injustice. They dragged it out to the full 2 years as much as they could. But, you know, now you're here on the other side. I mean, we're going to do the super chats in a minute. We're running about 20 minutes late because of the microphone issue at the beginning. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I've got to say, this doesn't seem to have changed. If anything, the system have sort of, you know, built you into something, because you never really set out in the movement to be like a big name. Like some people, you know, they obviously come into the movement, they're desperate to be at the forefront all the time and try and grab the limelight. You see these people arrive all the time and, you know, they're at the protest, shoving people, they're, you know, making endless YouTube videos or involved in drama. But you came in and you were sort of this quiet workhorse who just got things done. But the system have kind of turned you into one of the most recognizable faces in the movement. You know, how do you...
It was a real lone goal on their part, wasn't it? Because I wasn't really anyone prior to this. And then it's like now, you know, during my time away, I think, was it Laura was telling me Elon Musk was like retweeting some meme that compared me to two others on some two-tier justice kind of thing. And it's like, but this is how the state seems to get themselves into these trouble. They try to overexercise power, and all it does is jeopardize their own legitimacy. Like, everyone just goes, like, really? It's like, this is so fragile that someone just putting up stickers was enough for you to be like, I mean, it was a 2-year counter-terror investigation to find out who I was. it's like the resources involved in that. I mean, I don't know if there was terror incidents that happened during that, that you know, but it's like the for them to come down this hard on someone like me, everyone was just like, it's kind of like an Emperor's New Clothes kind of situation where everyone goes like, oh, this is all bullshit. Like it's just, it's all lies propped up by like the thinnest veneer of propaganda. And all it takes is someone being like, don't think this is working, for them to be like, oh, shut him up. It's like, we all have to say it's working or else it stops immediately. And it's, yeah, it's really kind of a black eye for them. And I could see that with their handling of me as well. Like at the start, the idea of my license was like, oh, it's going to be very hands off. Don't worry about it and everything like that. And then by the end of it, once the protests had happened and all the coverage and the letters to prison and all this kind of stuff, they're like, we need to lock this guy down. We've got 14 months with him before he comes back out. And it's like, we need to cut off his friends. We need to stop him communicating with anybody. We need to stop him posting anything online. And it's like, and I think the idea was to hope that either by the end of it, either I'd be broken or I'd be forgotten. And I was determined definitely not to let them break me. And thankfully, you know, my wonderful wife, Laura, made sure I definitely wasn't forgotten about. Yourself as well. I know you did like a tour of shows immediately after the trial to get my story out there, which I hugely appreciate. And all of that helped to make my time inside easier as well. Like the level of mail I got, none of the screws had seen anything like it. Like it was every day, it was between 5 and 10 letters or emails. I mean, the run up to my birthday on June 9th, it began on June 1st, and then it just got more and more and more until at one point the jail contacted me to say, our mailbox is full. You either need to send out a money order to get this stuff sent out, or else we're going to destroy it because there's just too much here. But that again, that got guards intrigued, and they were like, what are you in for, Amelia? And I'd explain it, and they'd be like, oh, right, okay. And it's like, yeah, I don't fucking like him either, mate. And they'd be like, all right, cool. And it's like, and then they'd be looking out for you and everything. It's like, yeah, prison isn't the best place to send someone like us, because it's like, it's a bunch of people who kind of buck the system already, so they've probably got views that may be a bit countercultural. There was no one who took issue with me at all, and if anything, it earned me favours from prisoners and the screws and everything. So, and then it also gave me a lot of time to think about, what am I doing? What am I putting out there? What do I want to do next? And that again, that's something I haven't had time to do. I feel like, especially with PA, we've just been going from event to event to event, kids, marriage, all this kind of stuff, and it's like, I didn't have time to sit down, and then I was given 10 months in a cell to just think about what I've done and what I want to do. And now I'm back after 2 years away with a pretty good idea of what I want to do, and a pretty good path forward.
Right. Well, look, I think this has been an amazing show so far. And it's like, you know, there's been some, I've got to say, it's touching him, you talking about this. And obviously now you're back, you know, you're looking forward to doing things on the outside. Things are, you know, back to normal for you. Has this really left any sort of lasting scars on you? Because obviously some people are going to, you know, some people would be delighted to know that you are kind of like beaten down or mentally broken from this. But if anything, this seems to have sort of like doubled your resolve. It seems to have woken a lot of people up to two-tier justice, but it also seems to have sort of doubled your resolve to get back out there. Because I remember when we first sort of spoke, when we were allowed to speak, you said the hardest thing was not being able to do things, and you sort of like, you feel a bit like sort of a dog that's chained up, and now you just want to run free and get back involved.
100%, yeah. I think there's, you know, I wasn't allowed online, and I definitely didn't look at any content while I've been online, but it's like the conversation has just moved so far and so quickly in the last 2 years since I went away, to the point where I think I was actually holding everyone back all this time, just being a massive cook, because I've come out of this to find out it's millions must go, remigration. And I'm like, I went away having to argue that rape gangs even existed. And now it's just like, we know exactly who's doing it. We're going to get them on a plane and get them out. And it's like, okay, like, you know, I'm going to speak at this demo at the end of the month. And it's like, where are we rhetorically? Because it was back then it was close the hotels. And it's like, are we just saying like, get them on the boat, you know? But it's been great to see. And it's like the conversation that's being had at the moment on Twitter around like, oh, what is British or whatever? And it's like the every reply under someone who's been like, British is just a set of values. As long as you drink English breakfast, then you could be from Somalia for all I care. It's like every reply on under that is like, you know exactly what it is. And it's like, and there's so much evidence now as well. Now Survive the Jive's done a fantastic kind of video on the origins of the British. And it's like, this is so well evidenced now that anyone purporting for the kind of values British, it's just, they just get absolutely blown out. And it's a sure sign that this person isn't serious, you know. And in this case, I mean, since I've been away, it's like the parties that have come along or the parties that have fallen, you know, it's like Reform seems to have just absolutely screwed the pooch in the last six months, you know. Was it Homeland went up and then down and down and down. And then it's and then it's like then this Restore Britain thing comes out like a week or two before I got released. And it's like, holy shit, there's a sitting MP saying millions must go and like just clapping back on people on Twitter. I was saying to Laura, it's like, I don't know if he's got like a clapback council staffed with like Zoomers. But it's like he seems to be on Twitter constantly just owning people. But it's there's I've got a lot of hope moving forward because I just feel like we as a people have moved so much further forward. And I know there was times when I was in that cell when I was thinking, it's like, is this worth it? Because it's like it doesn't seem like people are moving forward at all. If anything, it seems like we're moving backwards because it's like we used to have the BNP 20 odd years ago, now it's Farage. And it's like, if we're going to move forward, it's like, what's the point of the sacrifice? But then seeing everything now that I've come out, it's like, oh yeah, I did play a part in something wider, and everyone played a part in something wider. You, Steve Laws, all these characters and everything, and every activist on the ground, it's like we've been pushing for so long. I mean, you longer than many. And it feels like, all right, this huge machine is starting to move now, and we're gaining some momentum. And I think the people who oppose us are really, really struggling. Like, it's like the desperation. It's you can smell it through the screen sometimes, where you're just like, oh my god, you are freaking out. You know. I'm really positive about where we go from here. And I think for the first time in a long time, it's like planning for a positive future rather than like a dystopian one, if you will. It's really exciting, and I'm looking forward to just getting back stuck in with things again.
That's good to hear, mate. Well, look, I'm sure you're going to be telling your story on many other podcasts, and I can't wait for your book to be out. There's a few questions about that, but we're going to do the super chats now. If you haven't super chatted, if you haven't shown your support tonight, please consider doing that. Obviously, myself, Sam, Laura, we run Patriotic Alternative. All donations are very, very gratefully received. You can donate via Odyssey through Entropy or through Rumble. We're going to read those out now. And we'll start with Jack203. Who subscribed for $25. Well, thank you so much. Open Borders for Israel gave $5. Thank you so much. And he said, welcome back, Sam. Will your new book ship internationally?
It will, yeah. I mean, that's we're currently pre-ordering through Grammar Towlers, and Grammar Towlers ships everywhere around the world. So, obviously postage will vary depending on where you are. But, yeah, it will ship to you wherever you are.
Excellent. Open Borders for Israel gave another $5. Thank you so much. He said, are prisons in the UK self-segregated by race like in the US? I have heard even in Australian prisons, gangs are affiliated by race and you have to stick to your own.
Leeds definitely had more of that than Hull. Hull was pretty homogenous. You could probably count the ethnics in there on like one hand. But Leeds was definitely people grouped up together. The Albanians were together. The Muslims were together. But then the whites, it wasn't like the Aryan Brotherhood were active in Leeds prison. It's like the whites just generally floated about. You know, there wasn't a hard group. And if one of them was attacked, no one else was jumping in aid of them. The only white group like that was the Travellers. But that was just like, they were all family. Like everyone was cousins to someone else. But then they'd have internal conflict as well. And the Albanians were probably seemingly the worst, because no one could understand what they were saying. And then they were just really surly, like just always looking dead serious. And, you know, they'd look at you like murder. I think my first run-in was with an Albanian. It was my turn on the pool table next, and he made a go for it. And I was like, oh, it's my turn, mate. And he's like, no, I was next. And I was like, no, it's me. And we just looked at each other for a second. And it's like, I think I had about a foot in height on him and probably a few stone. And I guess he thought better of it. And he's like, okay, well, yeah, I am next after you. And I was like, yeah, all right, sound. But otherwise, it wasn't like there was like ethnic violence going on where it's like, you know, the blacks against the Crips or anything like that. And to be honest, I don't know if I got moved out of Leeds because the Muslim contingent on that wing was growing to the point where there was someone used to sing the call to prayer through their cell flap at like 9 p.m. or something. He was a really weird character. He was a Scottish Muslim. So it's like just some guy looked like his stereotypical Asian, except he had a thick Scottish accent, and I was like, this is a crime against humanity. This is sickening. Like this is so disturbing to hear this voice coming out of that face. But he used to sing the call to prayer, and with him being there, all of a sudden the Muslims were starting to kind of clan up a bit more. So I don't know if they needed a spiritual leader or something like that. But yeah, definitely worse in American prisons, if they are accurate portrayals, but and probably worse in southern UK prisons where there's more of an ethnic diversity. But Hull was nothing like that at all.
Okay, thank you very much. Southern Jutlandic Coffee Table gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, good to have you back, Sam. Love from Denmark. Flying Dutchman gave $20. Thank you so much. Said, welcome back, Sam. What's the best way to buy your book?
Well, Grammar Towers is the only way to buy the book at the moment. I was trying to get it on Amazon, but the thing where you choose your tax area or whatever, the page just freezes. So I can't get it up on Amazon. But for the best profit ratio for me, obviously Amazon takes more than if I'm just selling it myself. So if you can order through Grammar Towers, that does me the best favour.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And the link to the book is in the description of the show, by the way. Cat Hugger gave $5, thank you so much, and said, neither pleasure nor pain should enter as motives when one must do what must be done. Evola, the beast system was able to rain down punishment on Sam, but it could neither harm him nor break him. Well, thank you so much. Blade Man gave $3 and said, welcome back, Sam. Well, thank you very much. Dev Cheruski gave $5, thank you so much, and said, it's great to see you back, Sam. Thank you. Kerry Boo gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, welcome back, Sam. We've missed you so much. Thank you so much. Aunt Sally gave $5. Thank you very much. And said, if any of the jury are watching this, I bet they are, shame on you for convicting a decent and honest man and depriving his wife and very young children of their father. Well, thank you so much. Poit gave $25. Thank you so much. And he said, welcome back, Sam. Thank you. Mike Rochburns gave $20. Thank you so much. And said, it's a complete travesty what they did to you, Sam. It's great to see you on the other side. And you chose a great title for the book, by the way. Thank you so much. Dawny B gave $20. Thank you so much. And said, you're amazing, Sam. Well, thank you. British Gammon gave $25. Thank you so much. Said, great to see Sam looking so well. Do you think Sam's treatment shows how weak and insecure the regime is?
Yeah, I think we've covered that already. But every time they have to bring the hammer down, everyone just looks at them and is like, it's like, I thought this was supposed to be a good thing that everyone enjoys. And it seems like you're really having to crush people who go against it and not even go against it hard. You know what I mean? It's not like I attempted a coup or anything like that. It was literally just stickers. And that was enough to spring counter-terror into action. So, yeah, I don't think anyone looks at my case and goes like, Yes, yes, a good use of resources or anything like that. It's, I mean, it took them a year after Hope Not Hate had exposed me for them to even find me. So it's like they're not even that competent, you know.
Thank you. Odyssey Viewer gave $50. Thank you so much. Said all the best, guys. Well, thank you very much. Kenny Smith gave $5. Thank you so much. He says, Canoe. As a connoisseur of takeaways, I hope Sam was able to tuck into some kebab or a Chinese whilst in prison. Sensible nationalists need sensible food.
Oh, Wednesday was Chinese day and I hated it. It was terrible. Yeah. And we didn't do kebab. The best we got was Fridays. Fridays was pizza day.
So, like, let me just ask this. When you say it was Chinese Day, I take it the Chinese was made in-house?
No, it's where we cooked up the Chinese prisoners. No. Yeah, there's kitchens in-house, nothing shipped
in.
No,
I mean, yeah, so. I mean, it wasn't like a takeout, was it? They didn't, like, send out for an order.
It's Chinese chicken curry and rice, and I hate Chinese chicken curry. I don't know where I've had it before, but I know I hated it then as well. But it's just, it's a really lazy meal. You know, it's one of those like jar meals where it's like, oh, Chinese chicken curry jar. I can just throw this in with some chicken, but the chicken was always dry. But I always opted for something else on that day because you have it once, twice, and then it's like every week. It gets really, really boring.
Did they do prawn crackers or was that, you know, a step too far?
What? What? Prawn crackers? What? No, man. Get some water crackers with that. You ain't getting no prawn crackers around here. No, no, there weren't any prawn crackers, Mark. Bloody hell. What do you think this is the Ritz? Ritz, mate. You're gonna get thrown off the third floor balcony to talking like that. Prawn crackers around here, brother.
I'd be like, what kind of uncivilized society expects you to eat a Chinese chicken curry without a cracker? Like,
you're lucky if it's curry, to be honest. Like, there's some, I'm seeing a lot of rat legs but no rat bodies around this prison, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like there's something going on.
I'd be absolutely gutted. I mean, I'd just be like, well, you know, this could be better. We need to. So I remember once, this is sort of a slight sort of diversion, but I remember once Gordon Ramsay went into a prison to try and sort of help the prisoners find this sort of talent and passion.
I remember watching that, yeah.
So when did that? So this is the interesting thing. So in prison, I should imagine there's quite a bit of time to kill, and being things like working, you know, in the refectory doing the meals and stuff is probably a better job than just sitting in your cell for another 2 hours. Is that right?
Yeah, especially there was a lot of time around serving time that you were allowed out and you're just hanging out basically. So by the end of my time in there, the surgery was staffed with all people who were my friends as well. And we just shoot the shit while waiting for the trolleys to arrive. And then once you get done, it's a good laugh working with everyone there. But yeah, I mean, to get an idea of the level of the food, I mean, Hull was a lot better than Leeds. Leeds was atrocious. Like, you'd pick the sausage roll for your Friday night dinner, it'd still be frozen. Like, there's one point I had to put it on the radiator and be like, I'll come to that back to that in a few hours, you know. And that's what a lot of the food bought through the canteen, like the kind of purchase sheet. You would, if you knew what meals you were having the week ahead, you could be like, right, I can supplement this with this, you know, and everything. But you'd get people cooking up stuff in kettles, you know. They'd have a cooking kettle and a drinking kettle. And the cooking kettle was just, you wouldn't want to eat anything out of one of those. But I did cell clean, so when people moved out, I would clean the cell back to a normal standard for the next person. And, some of the things you saw in there, where it's like, oh my god, you know. I mean, people would be making stuff out of just the weirdest stuff. I think it's at one point someone cooked a pigeon that they'd found in the kettle. They just boiled a pigeon. So yeah, the food's pretty disturbing. But in Hull, it was all right. But it's all starch. It's all starch and fatty stuff. And I was on a cut prior to leaving, and every day it was baked potatoes. And if I never see another baked potato in my life, I'll think I'll die happy, because basically that was the healthy choice, was the baked potato choice. Otherwise, it's like fried this, you know, greasy that with chips and everything. So. So
yeah, when you do the baked potatoes, like my wife, she takes the actual potato out of the skin, mixes it with cheese, bacon, a little bit of chicken, and some
spring
onion.
Sorry, Mark, you think you're getting more than one ingredient in jail?
What?
No, it's a baked potato with beans, or a baked potato with cottage cheese. You can't have more
beans
than one ingredient.
And cheese.
Well, this is the thing. This
but
is where you get
tactical. Who mixes your bacon bits into potato?
This is where you get tactical with it, Mark. So you'll get your baked potato at lunchtime with your cottage cheese, but you'll know that tonight it's, you know, sausage and beans. So it's like, all right, cool. So you're going to take your cold baked potato. You're just going to deal with that. But you're going to have all that sausage, beans, and the cheese on your baked potato that you kept from lunch. So it's like you start becoming tactical with it's like, right, I know what I'm getting 3 days from now. That's going to combine well with the thing I'm going to get 5 days from now. Like, this is what occupies your time when you're inside. It's strategic eating.
Strategic eating. Well, and just one last thing about the food. So when you're in there and you're sort of doing it, and you're saying it's like, you know, if you're on the server, you basically got a good thing. But do you guys actually put effort into cooking it? Like, are any of them? Because like, I watched this Gordon Ramsay thing.
We don't cook it, Mark. The sex offenders cook it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's in Leeds. Kitchens were 100% sex offenders. They all worked down there.
How come?
It keeps them separate. And it's a job. Well, yeah, I guess it allows them just to staff the entire place with them, you know. But yeah, there's in Leeds, cooking the food is all sex offenders, so everyone just thinks everything's, you know, filled with jizz and everything. So that's nice. Hull was mixed. There were some in there, but some weren't. But there's a big kitchen in the central area, and it's like people go there, and that's their job for the day. But I mean, it's how badly can you mess up turkey dinosaurs? You know what I mean? It's not gourmet by any means. And it's cooked up for 800 to 1,000 men. So I don't think they're stirring the giant vat and, you know, lifting out the teaspoon and, oh, the finest, you know, sprinkle of salt in there.
I think it's like,
what goes into this? 3 bags of salt, 4 bags of flour, you know, and just toss them straight in.
No, the reason I ask, Sam, I wasn't sort of trying to be facetious, actually. The reason I asked is because sometimes when people are placed in like a weird situation like that, they take pride in sort of weirder things. So you hear about people who get sort of put in prison, and they'll get like little stones off the yard and sort of carve them into little tiny ducks, and they'll be like, bloody hell, they're almost like works of art, what you've done there. And they're like, well, you have nothing else to do. So at that point, making a stone duck is actually pretty enthralling, and you sort of hone what you're doing. And I didn't know whether certain people sort of put themselves forward things and sort of got into it, took pride in it, and were like, this is my thing, so I want to do it the best I can. Or if it is just kind of like, get it done, get it finished. But obviously you weren't down there.
For the most part, it was get it done. I mean, I took pride in the cell cleans because I knew that I would want someone to take pride in the cell cleans if I was moving into a cell. I would want someone to have gone the extra mile. But for the most part, no, the jobs, especially on H-Wing. I mean, D-Wing, the officers just didn't care if you did the work. So they had 6 cleaners. They would come out of their cells and there'd be no expectation for them to clean the wing, which just meant that the showers especially, you've just got bugs around the drains, the floors are like thick with hair, it's just really ranked. It got to the point where eventually I was like, I will clean the showers and that's just my job. And I do it once a day, and because it's like, I don't want to use the showers myself and no one else seems to be doing anything about it. But for the most part, people were just... it off. If you got a job, it meant that you got out of your cell more in order to go into someone else's cell and smoke spice or chat shit to each other.
Okay.
But yeah, hobbies wise, matchstick making, you got some guys who were chef's kiss, like amazing work, like carved caravans and everything like that. And you're like, wow, really impressive. And then personal cell cleanliness as well. There's a lot of people who keep the perfect cell, everything in perfect place, and that's their little domain that they control, you know. And then you get people who live in their own shit. So, you know.
Interesting. Andy gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, welcome back, Sam. You're an inspiration to everyone, including many people here in America. Can't wait to get your book. Anyone who doesn't buy it is not a patriot.
Yes, get the book. Look at this book. Can you read it? Oh, yeah, it's not even mirrored. Who's that forward? Who's done the forward there, Mark?
Well, I hear the forward was written by me. Yes. Yeah, I did the forward for the book. Nice sort of a bit of a... Yeah, I did the forward for the book, and I was very, very happy to do that because Sam is obviously a good friend of mine. And yeah, obviously I'm going to buy a copy of the book. We should all support Sam and Laura anyway, in any way we can. And obviously people did while you're in jail. And I was actually really happy. I obviously set you at the fundraiser and did all the rest. And do you know what?
Well, that was huge. Like, to have Laura's well-being taken off my mind while I was away was... And also just the generosity. Like, it doesn't feel like anyone really, you know, thinks about you. And then it's like the amount of mail and everything was really touching. It was really, really nice.
That's good. Resident Baker gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, evening, Mark. It's great to see Sam back in action. Given the degree, things seem to have moved on in our direction whilst he was away. Would he consider doing another year or two in the hope that we get the Fourth Reich?
Listen, mate, I'll go back for nothing. You know what I mean? Talk to me sideways. I'll go back inside. I don't mind. Yeah. Well, if this fires us into the future, yeah, maybe this is what I have to do. I'll tell Laura, suck it up, children. Daddy's going away for a while because millions must go, isn't it? Billions must go.
Look, Sam, there is one thing that I feel that, like, you have, you sort of said, like, you know, you missed all those bedtimes as well with the kids. Now, I know that weighed on your heart heavily, but as a dad who has done many, many bedtimes while you were in an approved premises, if you ever want to do extra bedtimes, you know, I will tap out and let you come and put my kids to bed.
I'm all right with my own. Thanks, Mark. I'm doing enough here, I think. Yeah.
You can probably hear it in the background. You hit about 7:30 and World War III breaks out. You've got a six-year-old girl demanding she's absolutely not going to bed because she isn't tired. The day is not over. And really, she should still be outside playing. And then you have a little boy. By the way, my little boy, he's one today, so this has been a great...
Oh, yeah, it's his birthday today, wasn't it? Yeah.
One. But, you know, he some days is just like, I don't think I want to sleep at all, you know? And because he's mobile now, he'll be up and down the landing. That will raise even more hell. And occasionally when you're on these streams, you'll hear like this big screech in the background. And I can assure you, mate, putting children to bed is not all it's cracked up to be.
No, but I mean, Laura managed it for 1.5 years without me. I don't know how she did it because it seems like it's World War III for us with both of us here. So I can't imagine how she did it with a newborn. She was really...
No, Laura really, was really absolutely impressive. Incredible. Laura was absolutely incredible. By the way, I'm only joking there. You know, I do love my kids and I do enjoy putting them to bed. That was a joke for anyone who's going to clip it out and make out like I'm some terrible parent.
If you ever want a break from parenting, Mark, you know, you can just say the word.
Just go, send me the text. I've had enough here. Send me the stick.
Yeah. I'm going live to go away.
I can't deal with any more. I can't deal with any more. Mr. Obo 1010 gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, I got Sam the servery job in Hull.
Mr. Obo.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be yeah, that's probably Mark. There's another Mark.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but he, we were really good friends online. I was actually talking to him today, and he showed me some of the stuff that I'd given him that he took home and everything. But yeah, we were running that wing by the end of it. I mean, I was basically on the coattails of the travellers who were running the wing. I was friends with the guys who ran the wing. So, you know, put some respect on my name, you know.
I always knew that. I remember saying to Laura when you got sent down, like one of the first things I said to her, because Laura was great outside court with what she said. And I said, look, don't worry about Sam inside. I was like, Sam is not the kind of guy who's, by the way, I got his name wrong. It's M. Robo. Sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely him then.
Yeah. So, yeah, sorry, mate.
Mr. Obo. Oh, dear. Oh, it's getting late for old man Mark. Yeah.
But I remember saying to Laura, I said, Sam, if anyone that I've ever met is going to be fine in prison, it will be Sam. I was more worried about Sven, actually, because like Sven's sort of more of a quiet guy. He's more sort of like reserved, sort of more into sort of geeky stuff. Whereas you, with you being the sort of the statue you are, and I know that you can handle yourself, I just didn't have any worries about you. And I remember saying that to Laura. I knew that you would be popular in there. And obviously she used to feed me back the stories. It was actually quite entertaining speaking to Laura at that time because she always had good stories. Saxon Ford gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, Big Sam, little man waving his hand. Big Sam, little man waving his hand. Big Sam.
Oh, thank you for the waves.
Little waves, yeah, little waves. Definitely not anything else. No Chance gave $5, thank you so much, and said, Sam is a legend. I was gutted for him, especially missing his daughter's birth. I'm glad he's now back home with his girls. Welcome back. I will say this, guys. It is nice to, like, obviously hold your baby after they've been born. And Sam, you know, obviously you missed out there. But, you know, being actually at the business end while the birth is taking place, you know, not necessarily the, you know... That bad missing out on that part of it.
I suppose that there is that.
The screaming, the shouting, the pain, the wailing.
I didn't mind it. Laura's got a picture of me during the labour of Catherine where I'm the one lying on the bed and I've fallen asleep.
Just get this right. So you came on and you're like, I missed the birth of my second daughter. But what you... Right. This is the second daughter's birth I've missed because I fell asleep during the first.
I woke up for the actual birth, but there was just a point the contractions were taking. Come on, all right, how long are we dragging this out for? And, you know, we'd been in there for 12 hours. I'm tired. I want to have a nap. You know, it's like, is the baby coming now? No, you're only at 2 centimeters. Okay, I'm taking a nap then. You know, and then I was refreshed for the delivery. You know, she was a wreck, but I was refreshed. And really, who has to deal with it? You know, she's going through it, but I'm dealing with it. So I'm refreshed for that, you know. And then after it happens, she can go to sleep. I can look after the baby, you know, the baby that is asleep. Do you remember the first time you dressed a baby?
Yeah.
Like under that heat lamp. And it's like, they're so tiny. And it's, I think I saw Violet about 3 days after she was born, but just missing that first, like, the tiniest little life you've ever seen. That does bother me. Yeah.
First time I did, obviously, with Sophia, it was really, really sort of, like, obviously weird because you're trying to dress them, but it's like dressing a doll, but you're worried you're going to damage it.
Yeah, they feel like you're going to snap, don't they?
Yeah, well, one of the things that really shocked me is she started crying, and I was like, what the hell do I do? You know, because she just fed, and I was like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? And like, this nurse came in and was just like, grabbed her, like, slung her over her shoulder and just whacked her twice on the back.
She's trying to kill my baby.
And then she just goes, Sophia's just like, bleh. And I'm like, what? And she goes, oh, you have to give him a good whack to get the burp out. And obviously, she's a midwife, she knows what she's doing, and it kind of shocked me. Yet, with my son, I remember the first time I changed him, I was like, look, I'm a pro, I've done this before. But obviously I'd never done it with a boy and I hadn't factored in the penis issue. And he immediately started...
Probably never seen a penis that big, have you, Mark?
What?
Probably never seen a penis that big, had you?
Well, I mean, there is that. But when he started to relieve himself, obviously when you've only had girls, you don't have the spray issue.
Yeah, my brother's got boys and I'm thankful I've never had to deal with the just like wild fireman's hose like all over the place and everything.
Oh, he was weeing, and it was going in a big arc, landing on his own head and sort of splashing off his face. And I'm like, what do I do? And he's giggling, like, sort of
this
smiling.
This baby's sick.
And like, this is like, put a towel over him.
You've given birth to a pervert. Look what he's doing.
God. I was like, why didn't I factor the penis in? This is terrible. And obviously, then I realised. But there is a major spray risk with boys that there just isn't with girls. So, yeah, the harrowing culture of being a father. Caleb from the camp gave an incredibly generous $100. Thank you so much. Said, glad Sam is a free man once more. It was a pleasure meeting him and his family last summer. Looking forward to reading the book. Well, thank you so much.
Caleb.
Canadian Girl Rumble gifted 2 subscriptions. Thank you so much. And obviously, I always ask, if you take these subscriptions up, please do maintain them, because it means a great deal to me. S Stan 1 gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, great to see the gang is back together. 2026 is looking up. Talking of the gang being back together, Sam, you did pop on the other night to the Nationalist A team. Are you looking forward to gaming with the lads live on the stream again?
Gaming with the boys, yeah. And what a time to be commenting on politics now, eh? But yeah, I'm looking forward to gaming with the boys. You know, I'm so out of practice from not gaming with the boys at any time over the last 2 years. So I'm going to be rusty, but you know, be gentle with me. As I said while I was away, be gentle with me. It's my first time. And I'm sure we'll do fine.
I'm really looking forward to that, Sam. I really am. Hazelnut 3000 gave $10. Thank you so much. An unbelievable story, Sam. Glad you are now back in our general open prison. Yeah, I suppose, like, you've come out. And one of the things that has changed, or a couple of things that have changed, is things have got a lot worse in terms of freedom of speech, freedom of association, you know, facial recognition, talking about doing away with jury trials, not that a jury trial helped you. But, I mean, what do you think about the way they're trying to erode our freedoms?
I mean, it's all, it feels like they're kind of racing for the finish line now. I think they've realised slow boiling the frog. Maybe they feel that they've actually done it a bit too slow, and Europeans tend to get a bit angry, or things start to develop from there. So I think they're pushing hard, and the digital ID stuff and just tracking people. I mean, that's what multiculturalism requires, is essentially a kind of police state, because it's completely antithetical to human nature. So in order to keep it going, you're going to have to be on top of everyone all the time to make sure nature doesn't come through at any point. So that's what we're seeing. But at the same time, now what we're seeing in Iran, you know, it's like that's a pretty major pushback that Israel's experiencing. And it's like, all right, come on, Iran. Let's go. Okay.
All restrictions all right. Lifted.
See,
so Sam,
let's see what you got. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's, again, it's interesting times that we're going to put progressing, but also it's like what's happening within the world. Did you hear that Mark Carney speech from a few weeks ago? I think it was just a few weeks. He's the president of Canada.
No.
But he basically said, it's like, yeah, you know, that kind of rules-based order thing we've been doing for the last 80 years, it's a lie. It's all bullshit. And it's like, oh, okay, then. And it's like, this is, I think he was talking to, like, Davos, or that summit that they do or whatever, and it's like, okay, I think they realise this isn't really tenable, and something new is going to have to be struck upon. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see where we go. But I think part of that for every country will be self-interest within their own people. Like the multiculturalism thing, all it does is weaken a state. I think that's become more than evident at this point.
Thank you. Serena JB gave $10. Thank you so much. So great to see Sam again. What a disgusting system we're living under, indeed. It Was Made Up gave $5. Thank you so much. And said, did either of you see Tucker's recent video about Iran? He sounds like one of our guys. Well, I have. And it's amazing that basically Tucker Carlson is now saying America is run by Jews for the betterment of Israel. And essentially, you know, we are an occupied nation. I've never seen anyone talking like this in the mainstream before. It's quite incredible.
It is. That's pretty damn cool, man. Like, yes, here we go.
Ethno-nationalist gifted 5 subs to the channel. Thank you so much. And please, please do. I've seen 5 people claim that instantly. Really kind of you to gift those subs. If you can, please maintain them. That would mean a big, big thing for me. If I could get 400 or 500 subs every, 400 or 500 subs on the channel, it would cost those people $5 each a month. But for me, that would mean at the beginning of every month, the majority of my costs would be covered. I'd appreciate that. Gregory Hears gave $33. Thank you so much. And said, Sam, I was thinking of you and praying for you throughout the past 2 years following Laura and Mark's channel. Because of you, I learned of PA and did Mark's push-up challenge. Can't wait for the book. God bless. Yes, Sam. Thank you so much for doing the push-up challenge. But Sam, we obviously missed you with the push-up challenge and the gaming. And the weird thing is, Patriarch's had a child now. So when you come back on the stream, everyone's a dad with their own kids. It's like 4 dads, 4 gamers, 4 fitness guys all on the stream. Obviously, Euro stood in for you. He is neither a dad nor a fitness guy. And sometimes I have to question his ability as a gamer. But... Sorry, Euro.
I'm looking down this checklist. It's not looking good, Euro. It's not
good. But yeah, are you back this year as well for the 9,000 in November? Thank you so much for that super chat, my friend.
Yeah, I definitely got well into fitness while I was away. I think I cut about 2.5 stone while I was inside. A lot of running, really. Some of that's come back on since coming out, and that was a surprise as well to the lifestyle. Coming out to having a 2-child lifestyle now, and it's like, oh, okay, they don't go to sleep at the same time, and they there's always one of them that wants something. It's like, I think I'll go back inside actually. Where's Mark's number? I'll give him a call.
The first time I saw you, which definitely wasn't a violation of your probation in any way, I couldn't believe how good you looked. It was like,
dangerous. Which is like,
I was like, God, he's really shaped up in there. He looks like fantastic. You know, it's like, what are they feeding him? But both you and Sven came out, and both of you looked really good, really healthy. And I was so happy to see none of this broke you or got you down, mate. Like, you are one of the best people I've ever met in my life. And like, I'm so proud to be able to call you a friend. I love spending time with you, as you know. I love gaming with you. I love chatting with you. I can spend like all day with you and we just have a laugh. And like, you know, I'm so happy you're back, mate. And I'm so happy that it didn't break you. Scaredy gave $98. Thank you so much for such a generous super chat. I said, hi, wow. Sam and Mark. Congratulations on your freedom and good health. It's great to hear everyone inside and out liked your patriotism. You said it's amazing how stopping immigration ideas move forward. But how will counter-terrorism traps and laws improve beyond judges retiring? Happy birthdays too. Well, thank you so much for saying happy birthday. Obviously, it's my son's birthday today. But yeah, how do you think they will do this? Because obviously, this is one of the most important questions we've had tonight, because it's been pretty upbeat. And I know we're running a little late, but this is obviously a generous super chat. And I said it is one of the most important questions, in that things have moved. The Overton window has moved, and many of our talking points have been normalized. But how will counter-terrorism sort of change and adapt to keep persecuting us? Or do you think it can't? Do you think if you were tried for this today, if you were on trial today instead of sort of just over 2 years ago, do you think you would have got not guilty because of Rupert Lowe and Nigel Farage? And I mean, Nigel Farage literally did a tweet that said, stop the boats, deport all illegal migrants. You know, Rupert Lowe has gone on record saying having a British passport does not make you British. Millions must go. Do you think counterterrorism will adapt, as Scaredy Cat suggests? Or do you think things have moved too far?
I've thought, how would it go nowadays? Because obviously the Southport attack happened while I was away, and I was seeing these guys who were seemingly on fairly innocuous charges coming through the prison that I was in, speaking to them, and they'd be like, oh, I threw a traffic cone and I've got 2 years and 6 months. And I'm like, you got more than me. I ran like an international stickering thing. And I was thinking, it's like, God, I think if I'd been done after Southport within the immediate kind of aftermath, I think it could have been 5 to 7 years. But then it's like, I feel like that's died down now. The media attention has gone away. So I think, yeah, now we'd be looking at, but it's just that jury. And it's like, I mean, if you had a jury and it was just one guy like you or me or many of the listeners to the show who were like, I've got principles and I'm willing to argue them, that's a lifesaver in that situation. If you've just got a bunch of average Joes or whatever, and then, you know, one leftist or whatever, it's like, I mean, these things just shouldn't be reaching trial. You know, these, the laws that, you know, race hate laws and everything, they just need gone, because it's like it's just political. And it's like, and once you take politics to trial, we're now not talking about objective fact. You know, as my prosecution said, it doesn't matter whether what he said is true. The truth is no defense. And it's like, if the truth isn't a defense in something like this, then it's like, what are we even doing here? So these laws just need to go. But I mean, counterterrorism will always adapt, because counterterrorism is informed by our political enemies. They might not necessarily be good at the adaption, however, they will try to counter what's going on. But like I say, it's their disengagement and disengagement of whatever it was, whatever that program is, where they're like trying to get terrorists away from terrorism. He listened to the arguments that I was putting forward, and he didn't have a rebuttal. And he was annoying probation because he wasn't willing to label me an extremist, because he's like, these aren't crazy, you know. And it's like, it's not things I can argue against, because they're all usually backed up by fact or statistic or just general rights. So it's they'll try and adapt, but for the most part, we can advocate for ourselves. We are allowed to do that. And it's about the extra stuff. Like in my case basically hinged on like some private jokes that I made. Like that's how deep they had to go in order to get me on something. You know, I've been shouting through a megaphone for 2 years by the time of my trial. None of that was brought up. So we can operate legally. Just got to be safe about it and realize that it's like, jokes will be taken out of context and used to smear you in courts. But I say, ideally, these laws just won't be here.
I mean, that's one of the things that we have learned from this, and we're obviously going to have to wrap this up in a few minutes. But one of the things I've learned from this is, back in the day when I was on trial, your phone sent text messages, and that was about it. Now there's WhatsApp, there's Telegram, there's comments you've left on social media, and all these things can be used against you and are used against you. And I can tell you this, the lengths they went through to get you were shocking, but you know, luckily you've come out the other side and you can tell people and help people. And my advice to anyone is, don't say anything in writing, even if it's a joke, that you wouldn't say in front of a court, because they will use it against you, you know. And certainly do never use racial slurs, and certainly never use them in tweets or things like that, because as jovial or as funny or edgy as you think you're being, those are the things they used against Sam. And if you pull a jury, which is liberals, feminists, migrants, you're in big trouble. Andy gave $5, and this is the last super chat of the night, unless anyone else wants to contribute, and said, hey, Elon, we know you're watching. Please free Mark and Laura and everybody else from Patriotic Alternative from ex-jail. There really is no excuse now. Well, I agree. Elon Musk has been absolutely terrible with his treatment of myself and others, and we know why that is, because we are the people who talk about not only demography, but the people behind the demographic shift and the people who rule us from their haven in the Middle East. So that's that. Anyway, we have reached the end of the super chat and the end of the show, and I want to say a massive thank you to Sam for being here. It's been a really entertaining night. Sam, you have the final say, my friend. Plug your book and then we'll close it down.
Yeah, pre-order Legal, Truthful, Guilty from grandmatowlers.co.uk. Hoping for a mid-March release. I think the final proofread we're just working through now, and then we'll be getting a test copy. Then shipping out. Yeah, check us out at Grandma Towler's Tea and Coffee and all that kind of stuff. And then come on down to Nuneaton on the 28th, is it, Mark?
Yeah.
It is Nuneaton on the 28th. Let's make it big. Hopefully I'll see you all there. Looking forward to seeing everyone again.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Sam. It's been a great show. Oh, we've got one last super chat. Santan Dex gave $20. Thank you so much. He said, welcome back, Sam. Coming from a Brit raised in Australia. You're a hero to us all. Well, thank you so much. And what a lovely super chat to end things on. I just want to say a huge thank you to Sam for being here. I want to say a massive thank you to everyone who donated so generously. And remember, if you're watching on replay, please do consider making a small contribution. Some of these, the biggest stream we've had recently, seen be it by over 80,000 people. Now, if everyone who watched that stream had just given sort of, you know, $3, we would have been, you know, we would have been overwhelmed, but you guys wouldn't have even noticed it missing in your bank account, because I don't think you can get a Red Bull for $3 now. I mean, but it would make a big difference. But thank you to everyone who did contribute so generously, and thank you to everyone who tuned in. I will be back on Friday for a special stream about the escalating situation in the Middle East. We will have a panel of people to answer your questions and discuss the situation. But until then, I just want to say thank you to Sam. Thank you to everybody who tuned in, and to everyone who donated so generously. And a special thank you to all those who supported Sam while he was incarcerated, and obviously his wife and family too. Please do order his book. I think it's going to be amazing, and we'll obviously do a book review of that one Sunday night with Sam on there, so we can ask him questions and give that a big plug. Anyway, thank you again to everyone, and I'll see you again next week for another episode of Patriotic Weekly Review. Thank you. I love you all, and good night.
Bye bye.